Tonight's episode of Fife Club is brought to you by everyone's favourite friendly cafe. Yes, that's right. It is, if you're Italian, Caffè Giacomo's. No, that's if you're from Fife. Although, if you're Italian, it's actually Caffè Giacomo's. But anyway, there you go. What can you do? £2.50, tea and scone. Can he beat it?
Is it called Giacomo's because of the size of people in there?
Yeah.
I'd include myself in that, but you know.
Freddie Flintoff.
Just for big lads. It's just for big lads. They will never sponsor us.
We've given them some free press.
Yeah.
Fifers, welcome back to the one and only podcast where a bunch of Fifers get together and have a chat, putting their world to rights. That's right, it's Fife Club. As always, the first rule of Fife Club is, please, talk about Fife Club.
Yay. That's called enthusiasm.
I love your disdain.
Yeah.
For our own model.
Don't talk about it. This should be your shameful, dirty little secret. It's like your stash of jazz mags under your mattress. That's what this is.
You've shown your age.
Yeah, I know. Absolutely.
So are those jazz mags.
You guys must be talking, as we are getting more likes and new followers on Twitter. People are interacting with us. We got a lovely follow from the guys over at Walk Fife. They have a website that gives you downloadable maps for tons of walks around Fife and are all promoting just getting out there. We've reached out to them and they have also... We reached out to them as they also have a podcast and they have suggested that we do a crossover. So we will work that out and let you lovely folk know when that will be. And
we could, frankly, we could all do with getting out for a walk.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good thing.
It's a bloody good idea.
Well, I can see like they having a great time, then just us just huffing and puffing, going.
Have you guys got the defibrillator?
I need. Oh,
I highly recommend giving their podcast a wee listen. It's entertaining. I basically go for a walk and have a chat about the walk and then cut away to interviews with other people and other bits and pieces. It's quite an enjoyable wee half hour to listen to.
Cracking stuff.
So yeah, hopefully that will be on the card soon. And also, on the note of crossovers, our Jamie's time to shine has finally arrived. A few weeks ago, he lent his vocal talents to the Bugler podcast, who let him shill Fife Club, or more accurately, neg on us. It was quite nice, though.
I will like add a desperate man in a noise.
Mark's drawn a penis. I don't know why.
He's trying to distract you.
Oh dear, okay. I'll add the link to the description, or you can search under BUGLR on your favourite podcast app too, I think. It's a good episode where Jamie and Rob rip on social media for around about 35 minutes. So I highly recommend checking it out.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah. In return, we shall be inviting one of their guys onto Fife Club next week. So might be Rob, might be Tom. We don't know quite who yet. We'll see what happens. But yeah, it'll be interesting as well because we'll be doing it long distance through like Skype. And I don't know how that will work. We'll see. It'll be interesting.
Probably work out like all of my long distance relationships.
You got me a second before. It'll be great. You'll think it'll be going great for a couple months, then it'll just fall apart.
Then they'll be seeing other people.
Yeah. Oh, you poor guys. Look what you've got to look forward to.
We're so lonely.
Yeah, sorry, Rob. Sorry, Tom. let's hope it all works anyway. As I say, it's just something more, a little something to look forward to. So around the mic with me tonight is the one, the only, the internet podcast celebrity that is Jamie.
Hello.
Hi, Jamie.
Hi.
So humble.
You
so
can touch me if you want.
And next to him is a hidden celebrity who can mould the media and press to his will, but never hear his name mentioned. It's Mark.
That's so true. That's so true. I've read tons of shit that none of you will ever know is me. Hey.
He's quite literally the ghostwriter.
Yeah. Ghostwriter!
Second week in a row we've mentioned
him.
It's a big impact on you.
Yeah. Had an excellent impact on me as a kid.
And in the Protocol Angus Deaton seat is our future fringe celebrity, James.
Hello! I'm taking that, I'm not going to do much else with that. Come see my show, Edinburgh Fringe Festival this year, Easter Road. It's all about Hibs. I mean, yeah. I get it, it's a Hibs show, but you know, I'm an actor, I'm a whore. I've got to, you know, do whatever needs to be done.
Again. I heard three words in there. But we do, under no circumstances, promote that.
So. No. You do know this is Fife Club.
Yeah. Yeah. But James's phone number will be written on the back of toilet doors. Across the Fife area, and you don't need to get tickets for that.
But you are going to pay.
Not a lot.
Well, no, we're not blaming you for getting involved in the world of Hibs related stuff.
Yeah,
sounds good.
It's a pretty cool show. It's pretty fun. It's about the first 30-40 years of Hibs becoming a club. So yeah, we're doing Easter Road, August 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th, and 20th. Tickets have sold out of all the shows apart from the 16th. So. Bum rush the ticket website, folks.
Yeah,
so
get in there quick. You won't let us come. We'd only echo.
Where's the Fife?
Our record of heckling at the Edinburgh Festival is pretty strong, actually.
Mon the pass.
And Cuts, you're here with us this week as well.
Yes.
How are you? Are you
I'm good? All right. I'm not too bad, yeah.
Going to be tardy about putting the old podcast up this week?
Yeah.
How dare you?
So the man who's famous for forgetting his watch.
So I was off last
You only week. Do all the work for this podcast.
Yeah. I don't do everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I was off last week and had a busy couple of days, and we were helping friends move on Friday, and it wasn't until about 8 o'clock on Friday night I sat there and went, oh shit, it's Friday and I've not touched the podcast. Oh well. And I planned on getting out on Saturday, but that didn't happen, so Sunday morning. But hey, people have been downloading and listening, so sorry for the lateness, but we'll be back to normal this week.
You've got to get down on Friday though, so...
Friday. Yeah. Jamie, do you want to give us the socials?
Oh, God.
After you spent the whole time mocking social media, look at you, the irony of ironies.
I know.
If you need a bit of paper, you'll need to give me a second.
Well, I'll try it freestyle. Just like...
Do you need me to lay down a fat beef?
Go on.
I can't. I talked a really strong game there for a while. I actually talked myself right into a corner.
Right. Get us on Facebook at Fife Club Pod or facebook.com/Fife Club Pod. Instagram, Fife Club. Emails at fiveclub@gmail.com.
fiveclubpod@gmail.com.
And I'm missing one. Twitter at Fife Club.
Yes.
Holy shit.
That's not too bad, and I still can't find the bit of paper.
Has anyone emailed us yet?
I don't know.
No, it is entirely people try to get us onto their podcasting platform.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Viagra, I'd imagine.
And, nah, in fact, there's very little of that. It is mostly folk just like, hey, come to us and we'll do this.
People obviously know that you're a famed Lothario, Catch.
Yeah, that's it. That's the one. Totally, 100%.
Swordsman.
Yeah.
Wind chimes outside his door.
Wow. So, tonight, we have got a couple of things that we're going to talk about. Funnily enough, that's what we do every week, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're not familiar with the format of the show so far.
We're certainly not.
As opposed to an hour and 20 minutes of dead silence.
Yeah.
Well, that being said, there was a time where like 4 minutes and 48 seconds of silence was topping the Christmas charts. I can't remember what it was. You remember when they had that big phase of like try to make sure X Factor never got Christmas number one. I think it was around about that same time that Rage Against the Machine got Christmas number
one. It's a classical piece by, I can't remember his name. I've got it right in a pub quiz before when I couldn't remember his name. It's a piece which is completely silent.
Yeah, it's just nothing for 4 minutes and 40 odd seconds.
Yeah.
And the radio station said, and coming out number three, silence! What? And they just put like a minute's worth of just nothing, dead air. And it's just like, well, that was silence.
Better than Radio 1, am I right? No, but seriously, we'd love to be on Radio 1. We could do a better breakfast show.
Definitely.
Hands down.
Yeah.
Although, could we do a better breakfast show for, like, 16 to 25? Age range.
I could care less.
People that age listen to Radio 1.
Anyway. Yeah.
I don't want a hipster radio in the morning. I want a grumpy guy with a cup of coffee and a bacon roll. I don't want anything else than that.
Nihilist radio.
I would love that.
Yeah. Why are you getting dressed? Ultimately, everything's pointless. Constant references to that.
Lovely. So, the main topics for tonight are...
TV shows,
yeah.
We're going to hit on the old TV farm.
A little bit about the TV shows anyway. I've just finished watching the first four seasons, the only four seasons of Silicon Valley. It is a very good show, and I don't know why I haven't got onto it sooner. But it's actually been quite good watching it back to back. The constant struggle of Pied Piper and Richard, what's his second name?
Hendrix,
to try and get his baby off the ground. It's very, very, very entertaining. But the one thing I've noticed while watching it is how very similar in its basic setup and format it is to The Big Bang Theory.
Right. I'm going to disagree with you on that.
That's fine.
But I think it was definitely commissioned because The Big Bang Theory was a thing.
Yeah.
And HBO wanted... Oh, there's been another couple that I've seen which are like geek comedies.
Yeah.
And most of them have failed, but Silicon Valley is written by Mike Judge, who did Beavis and Butthead and King of the Hill and...
Office Space.
Oh, one of my favourite films ever. Great film.
Don't know, I've seen it.
It's not on anything that I have access to.
It used to be, I don't think it is now, yeah. It's annoying. But it's basically about this startup in Silicon Valley trying to make it.
Yeah.
But I think it's quite different to...
Can I ask a very quick question about the premise there? So is it laughing about the situation of being in Silicon Valley with relatively funny characters and the absurdity of Silicon Valley? Or is it a kind of knowing we are Silicon Valley, so we're a bit cool and therefore it's...
There's one character who's like that in the main cast.
Yeah, and I think they're there to... But it's there almost to point fun at that.
Yeah, he's meant to be ridiculous. So yeah.
It's less like a full on ha 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 sitcom and more like a drama, like a black comedy drama type thing.
Yeah,
I would say.
It's kind of like I think it quite was like kind of like The Social Network, but a comedy. So it's kind of got that serious bit, and they do in almost every episode, there's a bit of the feels.
Yeah.
Where like this music starts.
Yeah.
And, but it's more, it's typical, like Mike Judge and his live action stuff anyway. Yeah. It's more subtle than it is. Well, although there's ridiculous things you get in all sitcoms, like ridiculous situations and people doing stupid things and something at the beginning, it's come back at the end to haunt
them. It's completely sending up Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
And how ludicrous and absurd it is. And you can very much believe that a lot of what happens has been based on, like, true and real things.
Yeah.
Real events.
Because Mike Judge was a programmer in the 80s, but he was a programmer.
It is that sort of thing where it's obviously taken to the slightly, you know, the extremes, or, you know, like, collaborating 40 years worth of stories into... You're like one startup's struggle to make it big.
I guess what I was trying to get at is it kind of more like Nathan Barley, where there's a level of laughing at the absurdity.
There's a level of that, but it doesn't go as full in on it.
Yeah, of course. Like Nathan Barley was pretty pretty outstanding for that.
It's more about the characters all being terrible in some way.
Yeah.
And them, like, them getting into situations which are ridiculous.
Yeah.
Whereas I think that Big Bang Theory, I've only watched a few episodes of it. Mm-hmm. I have laughed at the episodes I've seen, but kind of everything I think's wrong with American comedy. So it's more...
I will say I'm, you know, a Big Bang Theory apologist through and through. I thoroughly enjoy it. It's a good show. It is starting to feel a bit tired after, 12 seasons now?
God, is that how many it's on?
Yeah.
Wow.
And it probably could be doing with coming to an end soon.
And they're doing a spin-off as well.
Yeah, which that doesn't look any good. But it's got its problems. The characters are quite two-dimensional. They have changed and grown, but it's taken them 12 years to change and grow.
In the Big Bang Theory.
If you watch like the episodes, Sheldon being like one of the main draws in it, Sheldon Cooper, who's this sort of like, he's supposed to be obviously super genius, but...
vaguely autistic.
Yeah.
Detached, not,
yeah, detached
from reality.
Very sort of centered around himself, essentially himself being the center of the, you know, the universe, and that everything should rotate around him. It is a bit of a sort of slapsticky stereotype of somebody with autism, not a sort of a true representation, and that kind of obviously takes away from that side of it. Also, again, the sort of with him in the very first season, if you watch how his character is in the first season to how he is in the last season, there is a lot of differences. It's actually at times almost like a different character.
Mm-hmm.
But even though they keep trying to take him back, mm-hmm. like to being this, like he now understands sarcasm. He didn't understand sarcasm. I mean, he now understands it or gets, you know, is able to read it. He understands concepts like love and whatnot, where before he didn't. But like I say, it has taken the full 12 seasons for these characters to grow and change, where...
That's kind of surely the success of the... Like, basically, it's like a kind of multi-layered fish out of water comedy. If you think about the premise.
So yeah.
Sheldon's the fish out of water in terms of he's unlike any other human being. Mm-hmm. Penny's the fish out of water. Like, Penny's a kind of reverse fish out of water. So rather than the geeky guy or geeky girl trying to hang about with the popular clique in traditional American kind of setup, she's the really popular, attractive one who comes into this group where everyone's geeky.
Yeah.
And then there are problematic racial stereotypes. But
the kind of setup as well with Big Bang is they're all scientists in one way or another, like the particle physicists and string theorists and what have we got? We've got
Raj is astrophysics,
and then there's like
the engineer who's looked down on
because he's an engineer, The problem with that though is that although it's been very successful, those characters are actually quite unrelatable in those fields. Like, you know, the gags that are put in are quite often sometimes do feel very forced. Like, they're the lowest common denominator of what science, you know, or what science geeks are thought of as. So it almost actually, it doesn't really help the cause of the science geek. It really...
It's sort of pointing and laughing a lot.
It almost is, yeah.
See, I think the difference... I've actually seen more than a few episodes of Big Bang Theory now I think about it. Mm. I've seen loads. Yeah. But I think the difference for me is that Silicon Valley is... Whereas Big Bang Theory, it comes... The production annoys me for a start. It comes off like a Nickelodeon show, like a...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not even like Friends or Cheers, or...
I mean, I would say it certainly owes a lot to Friends.
But it's not like Friends. It's like the timing and everything's like a kid's American kids TV show, which is weird. Like,
I think I know
they're like constant joke after joke. And because of that, nothing sticks.
The other thing with Big Bang is the laughter. I mean, it is filmed in front of a live audience, but I think there's a hell of a lot of canned laughter where there's a joke where if it wasn't for the canned laughter, a lot of the audience might not know to laugh.
Yeah.
Where that's, you know, it's obviously, if there's laughter, it's saying laugh now.
I also think on the character development front, I think that Big Bang Theory is more like, oh, there's these geeks, look how geeky they are. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think that Silicon Valley did what Frasier did for psychiatrists,
mm-hmm.
which is that Frasier, like, I've read a lot of psychiatrists saying they really liked Frasier because up until then on TV, psychiatrists were all the same. They were usually German or, like, really smart Americans with a moustache and a monocle or something like that, blah, 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 blah. But Frasier's completely neurotic and doesn't have his shit together.
He's the psychiatrist who should see a psychiatrist.
Exactly. And it's the same with, like, with the geeks in Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. They're meant to be rational and they're meant to do all these things, but they're all completely terrible people and kind of neurotic as well in their own way.
I think this is where the difference, again, the differences come in. So, like, the similarities in the setup is you've got five geeks.
Yeah.
Five geeks in a house, or certainly living under one another, one way or another. Obviously, Big Bang, as I said, it's all sort of science, is the thing there. And I do think that that's not as relatable. When you get to Silicon Valley, they're programmers. They deal with technology. And although not everybody is a programmer and they might not instantly get, like, some of the stuff, I don't think...
There are very few programming jokes.
But they don't go into programming jokes all that much. Yeah. And it...
I think they
come across as real people.
Yeah.
Where in Big Bang Theory, they're caricatures.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what I was trying to get as well. Yeah.
But when I'm talking about similarities, I'm talking about, like, that idea that there's five of them. They've got their straight man. They've got their eccentric. They've got their racial...
Asian guy,
you know, the racial stereotype. Yeah. But
look, when we're circling back, by the way, I'm starting on Raj because I've been winding you up, Jamie, saying that I love the Big Bang Theory. Like, in fairness, I'm just completely ambivalent about it. Like, I can watch it, find it quite funny at times, can not really enjoy it at other times. But there are things in it that I totally agree are problematic, and Raj is the one.
It's Yin Yang and Silicon Valley.
No, it's
no, but I mean, it's like he's not as stereotyped, but Xin Yang's a Chinese guy who's like a roommate in Silicon Valley,
and he's Chinese, and
he's yeah,
yeah. But Raj, but it's not just Raj. He's not the only issue with it. Penny, the way that Penny's treated as well,
constantly stupid. Yeah,
she's the. She seems to be there as, like, eye candy a lot. You've got the whole thing with Leonard, who essentially just wears her down until she, you know, and it's going through those sort of, like, stereotypical geek tropes of, oh, the geek never gets the pretty girl unless if, you know, he wears them down and, you know, essentially traps them into their life. And I feel that that's kind of something that went on. In Big Bang Theory, and again,
you never feel like it's an authentic kind of relationship.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of the time you kind of, like, watching it, you kind of think, I wish they would just leave them happy, but they hate one another. Mm-hmm. Quite often it comes around to the fact that they hate one another, and it's like...
What is it about Raj specifically?
Yeah. There's like, obviously there is a million and one I'm Indian jokes, which come around, like the sheer level of, like, the guy wisecracking out, like Howard wisecracking about call centers and things like that.
Yeah.
And then it's like there came a period where it's like, we've run out of Indian jokes, so what are we going to do? We're going to make him really feminine or possibly a bit gay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, but he's not really gay, or is he gay? Mm-hmm. And then there's like a whole series where you're just like,
swapping one cliche for another.
Yeah, they're basically, they've just swapped one for another one
for
a period of time to get cheap laughs. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, that's pretty problematic.
And then there's, like, his parents as well, which are just absolute caricatures to another level.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like, do you really need that? And it kind of comes up a little question. I don't know if I'm going to open a can of worms here, but do you think making a good sitcom is a dying art? Because nowadays you're at a time where you either have a sitcom that well overstays its welcome, or it doesn't live long enough to be able to appreciate it as much.
I think that sitcoms have changed fundamentally.
So I think that's the thing.
I remember watching Dinner Ladies, Victoria Wood, which is a fantastic sitcom, but she said people wanted me to make more, but after The Office came out, I just couldn't because it looked terrible. Yeah. Especially in the UK, like, but you know, we're bringing back all the old sitcoms for no reason, like
Open All Hours and All Not Only Fools.
What's it called? The one in the shop.
Open All Hours. No.
The one in the department store. We're bringing that back as well. We've done specials.
Are you being served?
Yeah. Really?
Wow. Yeah, we're bringing all these
on
ones.
The buses next. Then
we're bringing all this shit back and not funding new interesting stuff like Lemmy's sitcom that he pitched.
Well, it's like you're talking about. The Office. I mean, look at what happened on the back of The Office, not just here, but in the States as well. You had, obviously The Office in the States, but, things like Curb Your Enthusiasm, which probably came along about the same time.
It was HBO.
Yeah, but like it was comedy. That still sort of almost fly on the wall type scenario. You've got Arrested Development.
Yeah, which is
well.
The next lineage from Curb Your Enthusiasm.
And you've got things like The Thick of It and Veep in the States.
And Parks and Recreation.
Yeah,
and, you know,
Silicon Valley.
All these, they're sitcoms, but they're very much fly on the wall type.
Mockumentary.
Yeah, it changed
which,
that.
Going back to Nathan Barley though. Nathan Barley's pretty early doors
for that kind of thing as well.
But no, I think going back to your point, I think it's difficult to make a good sitcom because I think there are sitcoms that come along every now and again that completely change the way you do sitcoms in ways that you don't really necessarily expect. Because I think, like, obviously, The Office. I completely agree. The Office is one that totally changed it. Yeah. I think now, It's Always Sunny. Has pretty much shifted the game. Back in the day, Father Ted absolutely by going. It's almost like Father Ted shifted the game by like, you know how some are more expansive, more outlandish, and things like that. Father Ted just actually drew it all in and made it smaller.
Made it very small. Yeah.
And but it was like Steptoe in formula. It was like Steptoe and
exactly.
It wasn't that crazy formula wise, but it did like just make things so ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, similarly, the Royal Family came along and did something quite similar as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Black Books on the back of like Father Ted, again, that idea of bringing it small, Black Books did as well, where it was almost entirely in that shot. You know, there was very little of it outside of it.
But I think that kind of Friends formula, where you've got like the obvious archetypes all bumbling around together and doing things that you expect them to do. To me, that feels pretty... Because the characters now have to be more... I think that's where It's Always Sunny is completely blown out of the water, is because they don't always do what you expect them to do.
Yeah, they're awful people. You shouldn't like them, which, again, is the opposite of any... sitcom is that the whole idea of the sitcom is that they're your friend, quite literally, they're your friends. You know, you're part of the gag where... Yeah, Always Sunny. I totally flipped that, but still, certainly.
Still works. Yeah. Do you know, I missed Cheers. Cheers was one of the... I still think Cheers was one of the best.
But then Cheers went to Frasier, and Frasier was very different in tone from Cheers, you know, but it was very successful.
I suppose that's one of those few spin-off sitcoms.
Yeah, spin-off sitcoms are
successful.
Yeah.
I mean, the majority of ones that you see nowadays just don't hit the deck. Like I just mentioned there, they're doing one about Sheldon. It's like, do you really need that?
Yeah.
Like, some of them, like the Frasier one came around a bit more naturally.
Yeah.
Whereas the one, like Joey from Friends, and then the Sheldon one, it just feels sort of like...
We want to keep making money off this somehow.
Yeah.
So.
But also to me, it feels like the success of Frasier was because... Frasier was really successful because you had like the relationship between like Sam and Diane was kind of the anchoring point. And then you had like the real comic relief was with Norm and Cliff. Where the kind of real comic relief and then and Woody as well.
Carla.
I mean, but Frasier was kind of the smaller part.
Yeah,
and it grew into its own thing. It wasn't. Yeah. You wouldn't watch Frasier now and think, "Oh, that's that guy from Cheers." You would think that's Frasier.
Totally. Yeah.
And that's that. I think that's.
It's
a big
more. It's
that.
More than when you watch Cheers. It's like, huh. It's Frasier.
But I can't think of another one that was successful. Because Joey was terrible. Done. But you're going to just flog a dead horse. What can you do with Sheldon in The Big Bang Theory that you haven't done? Nothing. What could you do with Joey? Joey was amongst the most one-dimensional characters.
I've got one that isn't a sitcom. Is Alan Partridge.
Yeah,
but it's not a sitcom,
I don't know. Alan,
he came off on the hour in the day to day.
Yeah,
original.
But the couple of shows that he did were sitcoms. They were sitcoms.
Oh no, but his, but he didn't come from a sitcom.
That's true. Yeah.
And similarly, you could say the same about Still Game.
Still Game were
characters in a sketch show that became a sitcom.
Yeah. And then you had Bagged Mags and Fags on the radio, which I'm pretty sure was a thingy of that.
Yeah.
I've not seen that.
I was gonna say I was looking. Sorry, I was on my phone there for a while. So I was looking up.
James just taking a call.
Yeah.
Just selling your stocks and shares again.
I was looking up, and when we're talking about The Office and the sort of mockumentary thing, and when that all changed everything. People say a lot of times it's The Office, but actually there was a comedy out called People Like Us with Chris Langham in it, who's in the first series of Thick of It.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like the first proper fly in the wall mockumentary type thing. Right. It came out a couple of years before The Office did.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really good. I'd recommend people go watch it. It's really funny, really dry.
Fair enough. See, the first one I'm sure we'll probably move on quite quickly. Yeah. You're giving me the eyes to move on. But like in terms of like that kind of to camera piece as well, I always remember Sean Hughes and Sean's show.
Yeah.
Was actually, one of those ones like really back in...
Wow, I've totally forgot about
an era before, just somebody who was actually talking directly to camera.
The camera. Sort of breaking the fourth wall type thing as well. But that kind of spurred on to that kind of thing. I think though, like I say, I kind of strayed away and never got fully to the point about why they're so similar but different. I just think that the premise and the setup of the shows are similar, but how they're carried out are so very different. And like I say, I do like The Big Bang Theory. I am forever an apologist for it.
I could watch it anytime.
Yeah.
If it comes on the TV, I can happily watch it.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I've spoken to people who have very strong opinions about why it's the most horrible show on TV, and I can I can see it. I can understand it, but I think there's still enough in there for me to get laughs out of the little geeky references and stuff like that maybe not everybody's in on. But Silicon Valley, it's more subtle. The jokes that are there.
It's both more subtle and more farcical.
Yeah, events are farcical, but the jokes are so very subtle and build. And then you're not hit with a laugh track. They're not going for necessarily the lowest common denominator of a gag.
Mm.
They'll let a gag just sit there for a minute or two, and then it's until it hits. And then, like you say, the farcical things, like the company buying the company to get the company failing, and the constant circle of events where money's been transferred between hands, but the people involved in this Pied Piper project never see a bloody penny.
Yeah, they are always fucked over.
Yet seem to manage to keep control or get back control of the things that they're doing, and it's very a lot of that's very clever the way they build that in. And the way they build it out again, and like that can happen over a couple of episodes, and then bring a really big laugh when it all comes together. And I think even after four series, I kind of wondered if how long they could keep that up for. But I think they're managing still, even at the end of the fourth series, I was still kind of like you're constantly rooting for them, even though sometimes they're being dicks or bad people. You constantly want them to do well.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite an important part of that show, I think, that works well.
Right, I'm calling that.
Yeah, I think we should move on. So, Mark, you had a little suggestion for us to try, and I thought it might be interesting for us to do this live.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I just spurred by a conversation I had at work today, which is, have you ever Googled your own name? Because I'm pretty sure everybody's Googled their own name at one point or another.
I'm going to have to put my middle name, because there's going to be a lot of Jamie Browns out there.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for that one as well.
So a wee Google of our own names. Let's see what we get.
So, like, mine is, sporting a very handsome picture of me, looking about 10 years younger, is the first image that comes up on Google Images, which is good. So I am the first Mark Benman on the images, by the looks of things, but I'm not in terms of websites.
Oh.
There is a comic book illustrator called Mark D. Penman, who does some pretty nifty comic book art. Yeah. And he looks far more successful than I am.
I found a England football player, or English at least, called Jamie Robert Brown, midfield, 35.
Look at the confidence you speak about football, Jamie.
I know. English? I don't know. he's only played for 180 minutes, was in the Emirates FA Cup 2014. I can't find the flipping team he was in. Two yellow cards, one red card.
Well, I'm having a wee look at the imagery side of it, and there's lots of Craig McCutcheons, but none of them are me. I get about 9 images in, and I can see my Canadian counterpart that get emails from.
I forgot about that.
And the first thing I see that's got any relation to me is some Instagram photos. I think I've managed to do quite well on that. Ah! My own caricature of myself. I've got that. That's about 60 photos down. So I've hidden myself quite well on the internet.
I'm not even on the first page. This is glorious. I'm not even in the Facebook Jamie Robert.
I have found a BBC News article. PCSO James McIver sentenced over police helicopter laser. I'll just read this out. A PCO who claimed he was looking for a cat when he was caught shining a laser pen beam at a police helicopter has been given a 2-year community order. James McIver, 53, of Icklenield Way, Luton, was convicted in December for... This is in 2011, by the way. This is convicted in December for... of acting in a negligent manner to endanger the safety of an aircraft. Luton Crown Court heard the helicopter had been hovering above McIver's home. McIver, who faces a police disciplinary hearing later in February, was also ordered to pay £3,500 in costs. He was acquitted of a charge of recklessly endangering the safety of an aircraft. The court heard that McIver, who has been a PCSO with British Transport Police since 2008, had shown the green laser pen at the helicopter in the early hours of the 20th of May last year. Let's have a look here. Is there anything else more interesting? There's a bit that's got bold, lose everything. It's like, what does that mean? Sentencing McIver, Judge Philip Bartle said, if the pilot is blinded by the light, he can't steer into position. He might not know if he is the right way round. Fortunately, because of his skill, no harm was done to the helicopter and the crews. Quite frankly, James is alright, I suppose. It's not that bad. Martin Robertshaw said his client was highly regarded by colleagues and friends and had devoted his life to working in the community. He added that McIver faced a substantial risk and he would lose everything at the disciplinary hearing.
Wow. That's like playing on the heartstrings there.
Trumps there, ladies and gentlemen. Well, I've just had a wee look at the web stuff. Turns out that Craig McCutcheon is a fully qualified specialist anaesthetist. Yes, anaesthetist.
It's a bloody hard word. Yes. No, I'm with you on
at St Vincent's in Melbourne.
Nice. Yeah,
seems to have a wee bit of fame there. He's
probably explain
LinkedIn. And,
There's
also, that'll explain.
I was going to make an unconscious woman joke and intimate that I actually know they're dead, but.
Jesus! Oh my God!
Under your floorboards. But
oh my days!
I decided not to, but you forced it out of me.
Yeah, I wished I hadn't. Hell.
James McIver is a former New Zealand boxer. Fourth in the men's I've got a popular name. He was fourth in the men's welterweight division at the 1950 British Empire Games, which are the Commonwealth Games now. So not bad. I'm named after a bronze medalist from New Zealand.
It's all right.
There used to be a right-wing American poet who did things about like shotguns and things called Mark Penman as well.
Yeah.
But alas, I can't find him.
Can't find him.
But I'm quite pleased that I'm the first image of Mark Penman you find on Google. About 6 down, there's my LinkedIn photo as well. And then a few more down is when I reviewed a Spanish language course when I was on holiday in Buenos Aires.
I'm quite pleased that my picture isn't there when you Google my name first. It means I've got pretty much everything locked down pretty well.
So. I can hide in the internet. No one can find it.
So, like, all they've got... Are you saying you're the Madeleine McCann of the internet?
Holy shit.
Holy shit.
I'm not dead, mate.
No. Hide and seek champion.
Oh,
10 years ago.
Oh, my word.
How much?
And you got it at me for my joke. Fucking hell.
How much have your parents been involved in this, Jamie?
No comment. Don't want a lawsuit.
How many books have they written?
I do not endorse these messages in any way whatsoever. So back to the other one. But my Twitter, my LinkedIn, that's all right, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's fine that comes up. Yeah. Don't want anything else coming up.
No. Well, your LinkedIn, you kind of want.
I do want that pretty searchable.
Yeah.
Oh well, of course,
great name for your job as well.
Yeah, I know, exactly. It's nominative determinism, isn't it?
I have read this theory. I think it was Robbie Shade told me about it originally. Yeah, but yeah, your name can influence like the statistical correlation to your name and the jobs you have. Penman. And he was like, Robbie was like, oh, this is bollocks. And then he realised at the time he was doing his PhD in like robotics. He was like, damn. Yeah. And it's the sound of the name.
Yeah.
I've got one more just to I won't read it out. It's an article from the Herald in 2005. I won't read it out. I'm just going to read out the title and then you can do whatever they want with it. Dr. James McIver, an appreciation.
What a wanker.
Remember, the next time you're on this podcast, see the introduction. It's not going to be polite because we'll be past UFC Glasgow.
I know.
There's no need to be polite to you. I'm just going to take it in. I'm just going to enjoy this as much as I can for the next week.
Yeah.
Well, after Sunday, it'll be Monday morning. Just be like, James, you're a cunt.
That'll be pretty much it, yeah.
Moving on.
Welcome back to BBC Radio 4, where we make another welcome visit to our very own desert island. That's right, Fife Club does desert island dicks.
That was nice.
Nice little introduction. So yeah, that's us back to desert island dicks.
I want to do the beep, 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 beep.
So we'll be commissioned for Radio 4 in no time.
We're going to try and do this again. Last time it kind of broke down into farce.
Well, that's because we were all worried about the fact that you wanted to give us diabetes. Like, you were really keen on giving us diabetes on the last one.
No, it was to be sheared out.
Was it like Iron Bruce syrup, was it?
Yeah, Iron Bruce syrup.
Fucking hell.
But to be mixed, you know, with water, it was a thing. It was fine. Never mind.
How do we carbonate the water, Kutch?
We don't.
What's the fucking point now?
Still Iron Brew.
That's like still Tango. That was disgusting. Fuck you.
Really tempted to go around the table and Tango you right now.
Oranges!
You know when you've been tangled.
Last time I had a still Tango was in the Robin Cinema in Dunfermline.
Oh god. You need to get one of those, what are they called? You know when you used to get those things you had, like canisters of like
SodaStream.
SodaStream, that was it.
They made a hipster comeback, don't they?
Oh, brother-in-law Ali, he loves a SodaStream likes. He's a big fan of it.
Loves a SodaStream.
He's
I don't know what that says about a man.
I've got fond memories of SodaStream, it's lovely.
But you could put your own level of syrup in it. That's probably quite frightening though, isn't it? Like, could I make Iron Brew stronger? Should I?
When I used to work at the Deep Sea World Cafe, they had like one line of syrup and two lines of, you know, carbonated water. But if I was making my own one, I'd just de-hook the line, so it'd be extra strong. Oh, extra strong Sprite. Fucking amazing.
For a second there. For a second you made it sound like lines of cocaine. I am brewing.
Extra lines.
Again, we do not approve of cocaine.
No.
You just sit in the back of the cafe, just sitting out, and all you hear is
Jimmy doing a line of Sprite.
Did you feel sprightly?
So anyway, what we're going to do is maybe try and make this a bit more of a regular feature. And instead of leaving it as wide open as we did last time, we're going to narrow things down and do it on sort of a topic. And I'll bring one or two items to the table.
So this week, James suggested that we do it on unconventional survival tools. I thought that's quite a good idea.
Mm. Yeah, I'm perfectly happy with that. I've chosen two tools, and I think with these two tools, I could achieve anything on a desert island.
Excellent.
Oh, wow. I've got well, two tools to be used together. So
catch and beat it.
Check out the Joker.
Oh, you got a pack of cards. Oh, there's a Joker in there.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, yeah. Prick.
Well, Kutch, do you want to go first? Tell us your tools.
Yes, I will go first. What I'm going to take with me as an unconventional tool is a compact disc.
Very interesting. Well, yeah, I can see some immediate uses for that one.
Coaster,
absolutely. Where else are you going to put down your goblet of iron brew, Sarah?
Because you won't be able to move because of a diabetes.
Oh, God. That's one. Another would be
signalling planes.
Yeah. Yes. A little shiny surface to try and signal planes or boats passing by as well.
Boats are perhaps even more likely than planes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The other use is a handy mirror to check yourself out and make sure that you're looking fine for your coconut date.
Yeah. The question is, Kaj, on a coconut date like that, you're on a desert island, do you go balls tucked away or balls out?
It depends what's happened to my clothing and whether or not very I can much. Tuck.
I think I'd go for Incredible Hulk shorts. Okay. I think, yeah.
Not like torn. And,
yeah, I think that would go. Like that sort of rugged castaway. Yeah. But not obscene.
Okay. I was thinking more
Tom Hanks. So are you saying you'd actually just tear your shorts?
Yeah, pretty much.
See, I was thinking you'd be dressed out as like Tom Hanks from Castaway. That's probably a way to look at it.
Yeah, well, that's not a bad shout.
Yeah. The other thing that, you know, obviously because of the shiny reflective surface is if you were get a couple of palm fronds down into a little pit, you could use it to maybe try and start a fire, focus the light down onto it, get a wee fire started. The other sort of handy thing I think would work with a CD is if you split it in two, you've also got a handy knife. That's those things are bloody sharp when they're split.
But they are really difficult to break.
Not that difficult.
I remember throwing them out. I remember going to a friend's house
the amount of corrupt CDs like that you've been burning and they've corrupted halfway through and I've just taken them out and just snap straight away and in the bin.
So would you take just one CD or would you have a whole box of CDs?
I would just take one CD.
Well, there's going to be sand everywhere. It's going to get completely destroyed, so you better make it a DVD of The Big Bang Theory.
I see what you did there.
Well, you go for a Blu-ray disc, they're a bit more durable.
Are they? I thought they were about the same.
That's scratchproof.
So, going back to how indestructible they were, I remember watching a former member of the podcast, who I'm sure will come back soon, Michael Beattie, attempt to destroy a CD... a song called Firewire.
Firewire.
At a New Year's party circa 2004, 2003?
Something like that, yeah,
possibly. Yeah. And that was not for breaking, let me tell you. Despite his best effort.
He's got a history of this. He broke his disc of Halo 2. Because some American called him names and he fucking lost it. And like, were we playing? No, we were in your room doing something else.
What's that?
Code for what? You'll find out on the next episode list. But all we heard was this. And then we went through and there was a broken copy of Halo 2 on the ground.
And then he said he was never playing it again. And within about, 2 days?
It was less than that. Wasn't it that night?
Yeah. I don't know if it was that night. Because there was the day that his Xbox broke.
And the day he threw his controller at the wall for a similar reason. Yeah.
I've
been so close to that.
The day his Xbox broke, and he took us on a midnight run up to Asda in a taxi in Dundee to pick up a new Xbox. And we had the most awkward chat with the taxi driver, who really wanted to give us football chat, and none of us, the three of us, just had...
None.
I'm pretty sure.
We're totally unprepared for that scenario.
I'm pretty sure I did the classic, how about them powers? And he's like, oh, you're from Dunfermline. I'm like, aye, we've got a lot of new houses. Can't help it.
I don't know if we've covered that on the podcast before, but the typical Dunfermline taxi banter is, how about them powers and how about them new houses?
It pretty much sees you through.
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
pretty much sees you
through. Apart from that one guy I had once who, I've had him a couple of times, who claimed that climate change obviously wasn't real because it was snowing.
Yeah.
And I was going up to the hospital because I was concussed at the time and I couldn't take it. I couldn't fucking take it. And I went up to the hospital and they said, oh, you're concussed. And I called him and got the same fucking guy on the way back down.
When you're saying you couldn't take it, I thought you meant like you just opened the door and rolled out.
I was really fucking close. It's like,
just add to that. Get some trouble in there.
Fair enough.
But I think all in all, a CD's not a bad show. Yeah. And like, you know, maybe it might play a few of your favourite loot ballads, for example.
Sting. Look
yeah. Then there's you could go down the Shaun of the Dead route. I mean, granted they used vinyl discs, but you could use it as a weapon.
Well, that's it. Like if you snap it and it's, you know, that's
not that sharp,
you could definitely do some damage with that.
If you need a shuriken, you could just throw it straight to their face. Yeah. Whoever's coming at you, you could hunt with it.
Who throws a CD?
Wait, what does CD stand for?
Compact
disc. No, that's not the one I'm meaning. What I mean is, DVD was
digital versatile disc.
Yeah. See, exactly, because it's a versatile disc.
It's just like a waffle.
Yeah,
it's waffly versatile.
Blu-ray was named after a missing member of a Blue Man group.
Yeah,
he died in a tragic car accident.
Fuck, you don't. Yeah, too soon, man. Too
yeah,
soon.
Sorry, my bad.
Yeah.
So feeling pretty blue about that.
Dabba dee dabba die.
Kill me. Fucking kill me.
Yeah.
James, you got something.
Mine's is nicked mine's, if I'm being honest. Mine's would be a half ton of duct tape.
It's
your other thing going to be a half ton of WD-40 because then you're fucking sorted and you can't do anything.
Well, that's what I was about to say. That is one masturbatory session.
It's like human centipede too.
So
the idea got, I kind of pitched it from an episode of Mythbusters. So what they had done, they did an episode of what you could do with duct tape, things you can manufacture. Then they've done a second episode of trying to survive on a desert island with duct tape. And they came up with a number of methods. You can use all this duct tape to build yourself a shelter. You can make it as a carry device, not a carry device, but a pouch where you can find fresh water, fill it with water. You can make containers out of it. You can make a boat out of it if you're cunning enough. Make a boat, some paddles. It's quite durable and strong, so it's not going to fall apart on you. Like, unlike a CD where there's a shelf life on a CD. Granted, they're not sharp, but you know, you could make yourself a hammock. You could probably build traps with it as well. It's quite an interesting wee tool. You can manufacture it to whatever your needs may be.
That's a good one. That's genuinely well thought.
Yeah, that is actually very well thought.
I would highly recommend watching, I can't remember the name of the episode, but the episode of Mythbusters where they do go out and get all this duct tape to survive on a desert island, because they go through the whole process.
That's quite clever.
Even means of making fresh water from sand and the sea somehow.
They make a filter.
That is bloody practical. Both of you lads have thought of really practical.
Mine's
things.
Completely farcical.
mine is somewhat ridiculous.
What's yours, Penman?
So my first one is very similar to James's one, and sort of in some ways I'm kind of clinging on to that because mine is no more nails glue. Because there's as I know from university, there's absolutely nothing practical that cannot be achieved with no more nails glue. You want to glue somebody's slippers to the ceiling, no more nails is your friend. It will repair absolutely everything. There is no need for nails anymore, as it said. Because finding, you know, everyone goes on the desert island, they all build fucking lovely houses and everything, like little wooden cabins and things like that. How are you going to do that with no nails?
Like, a little bit of twine and things like that isn't really going to cut the mustard.
Especially in hurricane season.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's going to blow over in seconds. Essentially, you're going to be trapped underneath a bit of wood, at best, which is propped up against something. Not with no more nails. I could build an igloo out of wooden blocks.
I was going to say, wait a minute, there's a flottier igloo plan here.
Well, yeah, like...
You could use no more nails, but... It's just going to fucking melt.
No one else doesn't melt. Oh, no, the egg will. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that's a really strong point, actually. Yeah.
You just, like, end up with little thin layers of no more nails, like blobs of it. That's it.
Stop going watching Penguins Flip You the Bird.
Madagascar.
No, yeah. Lovely. So, yeah, and also I've thought of another really, really practical thing to do with no more nails is... because your CD was going to be used as a weapon, to find ways of sticking your CD to things so you couldn't use it, possibly even to your own back.
Oh, wow, thanks.
Really rip the piss out.
Just remember that when you can't start a fire, the CDs.
But, listen, I'm... Only a trap, though, to lure whatever animals there might be.
All right, I thought you were going to say, only a trap to lure the fire in.
Yeah, I'll just wear a shell suit, the fire will come to me. As we all know, wear a shell suit, Mr. Fire comes to visit. That's
that your second unconventional tool?
Yeah.
It's a shell suit.
Should be. But I was thinking, like, a little glue trap on the ground, you know, some kind of wandering fowl.
How big is this island?
I'm not sure. Would, like, walk past and get stuck in there, you know, like a mouse trap.
Ah,
so they glue out mouse traps.
Yeah, you do that, you think we're humane, until you do it with the one I did, and you find a mouse who's gnawed off its own legs and then died.
Yeah.
Lovely. I'd like your outside the box thinking, because obviously we're looking at the ways of survival, but you've taken it up a gear and thought about sabotage. It's like, if anyone's going to survive, it's going to be me.
Yeah, I will wear down cups. And also, like, you know, I could just, like, put it on my head as well. Just get a little bit extra hair in there as well.
If
I were to meet some kind of desert island woman or something like that.
I mean, if you're a total bastard, like, if there's someone you didn't like, you're camping with them, you've got that glue, they're asleep, you just glue their mouth shut.
Wow, this is dark.
I mean, even...
It's all gone Lord of the Flies.
Yeah. I mean, just have a little bit you can get like food through, but not enough that they can speak.
Yeah.
How much did we damage you on that first episode you came on?
Gordon the Gopher, there are things you will never unsee from that episode.
Wake up in the middle of the night with my mouth and nose mostly glued shut, with cuts just like dripping the odd drip of iron bruise into the tiny thing.
Into
just
your, keep your one open nostril. Yeah,
just keeping me alive, like misery.
Just make a funnel out of duct tape. It's all coming together.
Is this how we survive or how we kill one another? Yeah,
totally Lord of the Flies. That's the Lord of the Fly Traps I'd be with my
boy. Should we move on?
Yes.
Jamie.
Well, so I've got two. The first one is more practical, which is a stick, which can be used for, you know, as a javelin, to snap it in two, start a fire with the old rubbing thing.
A javelin for when you're hosting the Olympic Games. On your desert island. Yeah,
for hunting game.
hold on a second. You're going to desert island, potentially with trees on it. You've chosen to bring out a stick.
This will make sense in a second. I say it'll make sense. It's really not going to make any fucking sense. Right. The other thing's a carrot. What I'm going to do is I'm going to train the animals.
With the carrot.
Train them with a carrot and a stick. So I've got, in case it doesn't work, I've got the carrot as sustenance. But I'm going to train, first I'm going to train a parrot, because I'm going to train the parrot by saying orders. I'm going to train the parrot at the same time as another animal, and then the parrot will be able to repeat my orders to the animals. And then it's going to eventually build up, and they're going to train more animals, and they're going to train more animals. And eventually, parrots are going to be like the sort of level below me, like the bureaucrats. And I'm going to get them to slash and burn half the island and make it into a plantation of some sort.
So you're going to have slaves?
Yeah.
You're going to do this to live out a racist fantasy.
I've maybe watching too much of Into the Badlands. Yeah. I'll have some parrots who are clippers, some cows, and some animals doing the heavy lifting. And
so yeah, you are just going to be like Animal Farm, but yeah, instead
I'm going to be a plantation owner essentially. But and it'll be a pyramid scheme. So the animals to get sustenance, which they've worked for themselves, but they're stupid, so they don't fucking care. In order to get access to that sustenance, have to get more animals to join, and the ones at the bottom of the pyramid, oh, they get fucking eaten if they've not got anyone to join. Therefore giving me sustenance as well. And yeah, that's how it's going to work. It's obviously got a limited time, but I think eventually I could...
Right, once you've eaten through the entire... Yeah.
Then I'll have to use repression. And I think I could... This is the thing. I don't want to get rescued. I'm going to be happy with it and make myself a new life on the island as a plantation baron.
You're like Scar in The Lion King. Yeah.
I fucking love Scar.
But then... What's going to happen when your regime falls apart and chaos ensues? How are you going to get out of that?
I've still got my stick.
Stay back.
I'll take all these fucking animals with a stick.
Stick. So I'm going to throw a curveball into there, and that curveball is going to be Komodo dragons. Because they're not going to want a carrot. They're going to want your arm. And they're not going to take a sticking, are they? Let's be fair.
It's all about social control, though. The Komodo dragons will be given more... the more dangerous animals, you obviously give a bit more resources to keep them sweet.
Like your arm.
or another animal's arm. It's
like Gunchy's arm.
The monkeys. Give it them to the Komodo dragons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds... If they don't keep the other animals in line themselves, the monkeys. A lot of shit. So that's my plan.
Wow.
You guys were also serious. And then I was like, oh god.
In fairness, Jamie, I can't fault your logic.
Well, it's funny because I thought my second one was going to be quite ridiculous, because I was going to suggest a bottle of Buckfast.
Because, do you have a Ralph with you?
One, you can have at least one good night on the contents of the bottle, and then afterwards you've got yourself one of the most versatile tools you'll ever have. It could be used as a hammer, it could be used as a receptacle for getting more water. They are almost indestructible, so you know, you could use it for quite a few different...
And if you drink enough for about 2 hours, you're also indestructible.
Well, that's true, yeah.
Which is when you go around finding the Komodo dragons.
Yeah.
Sparking them out.
And then they don't know, we're stupid, they don't know about Bucky, they're just afraid of you forever. That's a social structure in place.
Just for one night, one night you pulled out the super juice. So yeah, anybody else had a second?
I was thinking magic mushrooms.
Funny about that. Couch's parents were in earlier, offering him mushrooms.
Yes,
that's all I heard. I don't know anything more.
I can't even deny that they're bringing me mushrooms.
The real twist in tonight's episode of Fife Club is that this isn't a podcast, this is an intervention.
You're recording it.
Yeah, and we just had to keep the ruse going. I think Jamie had ad-libbed that whole thing.
He's on mushrooms.
But then, do you know, James, it's not a bad shout in the end, right? Yeah. They're an entertaining fungus. Mm-hmm. Do they provide any nutritional value?
Probably.
Maybe. Some sort.
Yeah. There's probably protein and vitamins. There'll be certainly vitamin mineral content that you'll get from them, because that's what fungus is quite good at doing, is at eating and distributing, converting different mineral content and stuff.
Yeah. It could also be used to keep the passive slaves in line as well. Give them a bit in their tea.
There you go. What can be used for your bargaining then? Just have like the magic mushrooms. Just
give them. Live for the weekend.
Yeah.
So they get a little bit at the weekend.
Weekend, mate. One day.
What?
Not even that. Half day.
You do the whole Dread Pirate Roberts thing from The Princess Bride. We dress up and put the fire cloak and things like that while they're absolutely mushed out their heads and staring at you. You look like a god in their eyes.
Wow. So, I suppose that would be something. Mushrooms, aye. Mark?
No, I've run out of ideas.
Did you give us two, did you?
No, I only gave you one.
All right, I thought you had a second.
I did have a second one, but then I thought it was pesh, so all I decided not to bother.
Ah, well, fair enough. I think that was entertaining enough anyway.
Yeah,
so thanks very much. I think we'll give it a go with something else. Might be something a bit more serious, like a favourite album or...
Yeah.
Or, yeah, might do something like that at some point. See what ideas we come up with. If you have any for what we could take to our desert island with us, give us a shout.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, if you have any unconventional weapons, unconventional tools yourself, survival tools. You've
suddenly went Wayne's World. Can't be killed by conventional weapons.
But yeah, if you've got any yourself that you would like to share with us, give us a shout. Let us know.
How would you save or sabotage your Fife Club friends?
Yeah. On a desert island.
Totally sabotage.
It is desert island dicks after all.
Yeah. Terrible friends.
Yeah, well, thanks very much. We are going to return to our favourite little corner of Fife, Lumfinnans.
It's totally not our favourite corner.
Oh, it's to Gagarin Way, where the Fife Hall of Fame is. Mark, you have a Hall of Famer for us tonight.
I do. I've got my keys out.
You've got your keys out.
Oh, I've just turned the lock. Oh shit! It, like all houses in London, as it's been broken into. Oh, the place has been turned upside down. Oh, and there's a couple of junkies in there. All right. Anyway. Oh, yeah, no, I'm joking, people of Lumfinnans.
We never go to Lumfinnans.
Yeah, no, we're not allowed back. No, today's Hall of Famer, from my point of view, was inspired by watching a TV documentary a couple of weeks ago. There was a thing about Billy Connolly was on the TV, mm-hmm. and about the celebration of him and his knighthood,
mm-hmm.
and he was painted by a couple of very famous Scottish artists.
Mm-hmm.
During that period, and one of those Scottish artists happens to be from Fife. I think a really interesting and pretty fascinating story. I think it's also, there's a level of controversy in, mm-hmm. in there as well. But that is Jack Vetriano, who was born in Fife in 1951.
Yeah.
And I think what I like about the Jack Vetriano story is that it sort of comes out of nowhere. Like a guy who grows up in Fife, in a mining town, as so many people did during that era, went into the mines, was a mining engineer for a long period of time, and just happened to get a box of watercolours as a present from a girlfriend,
mm-hmm.
and just started practising away. Mm. And I think what's really cool about it is there was no formalised training whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So, and in the space of, like, actually, I think it's probably the space of... probably about 30 years, maybe,
mm-hmm.
he went from being a mining engineer to being one of the best-selling, well, certainly the best-selling British artist
yeah.
of all time in terms of some of the stuff that he's done and some of the best of work.
And definitely the money that he can command for his pieces as well.
Yeah.
He's like, say, best-selling's definitely the title there.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, the singing Butler was sold in... I was sold by Sotheby's in 2004, I think,
mm-hmm.
And it reached £750,000.
Wow.
Which is pretty astonishing.
Whoa. Yeah.
And again, as I say, for somebody
who's... For a lad from Fife.
A lad from Fife is entirely self-taught.
Yeah.
So I think it's quite an interesting story. I mean, he did learn to paint with these watercolours and things and sent in a few bits and pieces mm-hmm. to exhibitions and things like that.
Yeah.
Got no kind of success whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And then he submitted two paintings in 89 to the Royal Scottish Academy's annual exhibition, and they were accepted and sold on the first day, which I think probably gives you a pretty strong level of confidence that you're yeah. probably doing something pretty right. You know, a few years later, he was in summer exhibitions at London's Royal Academy, and that was it. Like, he stopped being a mining engineer and stopped having a mm-hmm. day job, started being a full-time artist. So I think that stuff's pretty cool. I think he's had an OBE. He's painted, like, tons of very famous people, like Jackie Stewart and Zara Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
He's launched a book, and I think he's got his own publishing company now. Mm-hmm. as well, which he started a couple of years ago. Done tons of stuff around Fife as well. Had an exhibition of paintings in Kirkcaldy, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, I think there's a something of a kind of folk hero vibe about him.
Yeah.
I think there's something that reminds you of, like, you know, people like the writer William McIlvaney.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's that kind of person that really comes from the place where,
yeah,
you know, they come from that kind of working class community, mm-hmm. and through like exceptional talent end mm-hmm. up then, yeah, but I mean, being internationally renowned, it's that kind yep. of thing. And actually, there's a kind of point here that I kind of feel culturally about the way he's perceived. So there's two different things. So first of all, I was going to say, I reckon if Jack Vetriano was from Glasgow, he would be even more celebrated than he is now.
Yeah, totally.
I think they have like a much better way in Glasgow of celebrating working class heroes.
Well, you look at elevating like Stephen Campbell, Pete Howson, you know, just some of the contemporary artists that have come out of.
Well, I think culturally,
they've obviously got a bigger art scene as well.
Yeah, 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 absolutely.
So, yeah.
So I mean, I think obviously he has really celebrated the world over in many ways. But I think that if it had been in Glasgow, you know, there'd be permanent exhibitions at like a People's Palace mm-hmm. or something like that. But I think just because by virtue of being from Fife, is probably not quite as, you know, yeah. we could really be looking at him as a kind of Scottish treasure,
yeah.
like national treasure kind of thing.
Oh, definitely. I think he would be. I mean, because he is. I'd certainly say he's probably in a long side. He's not the same type of artist in, like I was mentioning, Pete Howson and like Stephen Campbell, the what was known as the Glasgow Boys.
Alistair Gray as
And you know, they have a very much so. There's a hell of a lot of social commentary goes on in their paintings, and I don't think there's as much of that in Vetriano's work. He is more about the movement and. The sort of the setting and the people there's
you're right it's very stylized it's like period and stylized certainly all the more famous pieces mm-hmm. are
but then that might be because he was separate from that, you know, that scene, and he doesn't have the formal training, that it was more about painting what he liked and what he saw rather than about necessarily what was happening round about him, which these guys, they all went to the art school. You know, they were all trained to be painting about, you know, more about from their soul type thing. You know, from the
and also working with other people as well, bouncing ideas and techniques off each other.
I mean, you look at things as well, like Howson went away to was it Bosnia? He was the official war artist, and you know that affected. How his work turned out, you know, from then on. And again, Vetriano was on the totally sort of other side of, you know, he's on the other side. He is very much so the style and the glamour of the art world.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. If there's that kind of like, if there's in Jack Vetriano, there's that kind of stylized period, it's almost cold.
You know what I
mean? Because he does his paintings from. Like it famously works from photographs, not from like still life or anything like that, or you know, working out his head or anything. Mm-hmm. So it's about composing the right photograph and working from that. So it does give a kind of like cool detachment. Mm-hmm. Whereas something like Peter Howson's like famed for his kind of like raw muscularity kind of vibe about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that gets to the heart of why there's a level of controversy about Vetriano.
Yeah.
Is because there's a lot of people, I think in the art community, there was a little bit of, there's a lot of sniffiness in terms of
the idea that it's fluff.
It's fluff. He's not formally, I think that's, he's not formally trained. He doesn't come through the usual channels. It's fluff. He works from photographs.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't use traditional techniques. Mm-hmm. And it is a little bit, you know, cold and stylized and things like that. But to me,
the problem with that again, like is always my opinion, is that it doesn't matter if you're making a comment or if you're just doing something that because you like it. And if you like it and somebody else likes it and somebody else gets something from it, then, you know, what's the problem? Who's it harming? Why are people sniffy about that? It's not taking away anything from art or painting.
Mm-hmm.
It adds to it. It brings people into it. If that's the pop side of art that brings somebody into it and buys that painting and likes that painting, the next time they see a Howson or whatever, you know, whatever else is out there, you know, that might be the point that they go, actually, I quite like that as well. And then they, you know, it pulls, you know.
In every kind of culture, in every kind of these cultural worlds, we always have things like that. Like, I mean, like, look at us, for example, and like the fact that we all love Scottish folk music. Mm-hmm. If it hadn't been for Roddy Wimble from Idlewild, getting in there, who's not somebody who immediately was a folk singer,
no.
But he's gone down that road, and through that, he's been the key that's accessed things for us.
Aye, and pulled me into that world. I mean, I didn't really... there was a level of folk that I had listened to previously, like Dougie McLean.
Yeah, there's Dougie McLean of the Corries.
But as I say, what Wimbo did was brought us into that sort of almost indie folk, which then branches you off into all areas of folk music, you know, and it's definitely it's that gateway, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think Vetriano is definitely,
and there's a lineage to things in the past as well, like his works, like quite reminiscent of like Hopper and like Tamara D'Olimpica as well. So there's like little nods that
Hopper's actually a really good shout. I never really thought about that, but totally.
So and I think one of the reasons why I wanted to do him and enter him into the Hall of Fame right now is because there was kind of a little bit level of sadness attached with that documentary as well, which kind of only came out a little bit afterwards, which is that apparently Vecchiano had been a bit ill and had been struggling for a bit of period of time and hadn't been painting at all, and he said that doing the Billy Connolly portrait, because he had such respect for Billy Connolly. Mm-hmm. And I think that's of people of that age, particularly. Mm-hmm. You know, Billy Connolly's worked in the shipyards.
Yeah.
He was somebody they recognised.
Well, he's a bit of a folk hero as well himself, totally. Isn't he? So, yeah.
So I think that the fact is that having painted that and somebody who he obviously had great respect for, and you can see it in the documentary, it's still available on BBC Scotland, I think, on iPlayer.
Mm-hmm.
And that, he said, has kind of re-inspired him to get painting again, which can only be a good thing.
So. Yeah, totally. That's cool.
Really interesting. I only really know his name. I'm sure I might know some of his stuff if I saw it.
You would definitely know his stuff.
But if I know you saw it. I know his name. You know, I only really knew it. I didn't know he's from Fife, though.
Yeah, no.
He still lives around Leven.
He's a very famous Fifer. Totally. Yeah.
And in fact, I have actually seen him at an art gallery. I can't remember how many years ago. I was in one
don't
in
Edinburgh. I don't think I've ever seen him or met him, thinking about it, but yeah.
I just remember like walking past and it being in an art gallery with my mum, and my mum just saying, "That's Jack Vetriano." I was like, fucking hell, that's pretty astonishing. Yeah. But yeah, he was just haunting on our portrait gallery, I think it might be. We were probably en route to the cafe, to be perfect. I think they did pretty good crumbles back then. So yes, Jack Vetriano is going into the Fife Hall of Fame, and as much for a wee reminder to say, get back painting, Jack, and it's not something that's necessarily to my style, but I'm bloody glad he's doing it.
Hey, there's definitely a style. I always feel that his stuff's quite like, although you say it's from paintings, there's a movement to his paintings.
Oh yeah, the dancing.
Obviously there is the dancer, you know, the dancers and whatnot. But all of his stuff has there's just something about the way he uses the brush and he uses his paints and materials that it just has a movement. There's there's a feeling of
like
movement.
Matisse or something.
It's kind of cool.
Like the racing cars always look poised. Yeah. They don't look still or stilted. They look poised, like they're ready to go, and they're like the scarf's going to be flapping with like the
totally. So you know, I'm totally down with that. Total legend.
And just as a quick mention to Mags, that wasn't done by reading out Wikipedia either. So sod off.
Yeah. He sat there with his Jack Vetriano book this time.
I do have one.
Well, thank you very much again for that, Mark. And that does bring us nicely towards the end of the episode, I think, unless anybody else has anything else to say. Jamie, do you want to fire through the socials?
Oh my God. Get us on Facebook at facebook.com/fiveclubpod or at Fife Club. Yeah, or is it at Fife Club Pod? Yeah. Email us at fiveclub@gmail.com. Instagram Fife Club and Twitter Fife Club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just going to quickly plug my Fringe show again, if that's okay. Yeah. I'm doing a Fringe show this year from the 15th to the 20th of August. It's called A Field of Our Own. We're performing at Hibernian Football Club, Easter Road. Yeah, spit away all you like. You can find tickets online at edfringe.com, or you can go onto the Hibernian ticket website. There's only tickets available for the 16th as we speak, but keep going, keep checking out. You may have some more released every so often. Tickets are £12 or £8 concession. Show starts at 7:45 or 2 o'clock on the Sunday matinee, and 7:45 in the evening.
Fair dues.
Cool. Mark. I've got nothing as exciting as that. I was just going to say that, just a shout, like a quick look back to previous episodes, and we talked about what the fuck is it called? That program, Gods.
American Gods.
Fucking hell, that is unwatchable pesh now.
No,
oh,
really?
My God, yeah.
Really?
Oh,
I like it.
Pesh.
No, like, I thought that was absolutely brilliant.
No, I've absolutely gave up on it.
Right, well, we'll go into this another week. Sizzler there for you guys. So, yeah, that time of the night that I do have to ask James, what is the motto of the podcast this week?
When survival is no longer an option, be sure that slavery and sabotage will get you through the day.
I'm fully behind that.
I think we're all thrilled with that.
That sounds like the Jamie / Penman plan to rule an island. Yeah.
CBE, that's how you do it.
Good night.
Night.
Night.